Today's topic is evaluating IP metadata as capital. My firm, Claris IP, did a white paper on this subject. It's really just been an issue of intellectual curiosity for us. This is really not any work that I've done in my consulting career. This is more about a matter of, it's an important topic. It's a topic that I think can help people get off the mark in terms of investing in their metadata. And so this is really just a report around my white paper, which is on our website. So I'll start with just the overview. In today's digital economy, global organizations rely heavily on their IP, and over 67% of IP in the United States, which is 40% of the GDP in total, does not get monetized at all. Why? Because it really sits in boxes and in file shares and places where it cannot be leveraged. Under current accounting rules, many forms of IP are not recognized as assets on the balance sheet, and thus the value of these assets are not made explicit to firm management, investors, or the public. What that means is that when you buy a company for X hundred millions of dollars, you're not buying it because of each individual IP asset, you're buying it because of what their net present value is at the company based on revenue that they've earned over the course of the last period of time. Nobody really goes about acquiring companies based on their specific assets or around their metadata and how rich that metadata is. If ever any of you have been part of an M&A transaction, so often things like what you all do for a living, which is the sort of the back office making content real and functioning, doesn't get discussed in terms of the acquisition. You just buy a portfolio and then get the end results after the fact. And they may be a mess or they may be in good shape. It's really hard to tell. Even in IP due diligence, metadata is really never part of the due diligence process from what I can tell. So what metadata development creates future value and thus should be evaluated as a capital expenditure. That concept I think we all can agree on. However, it's not something that is currently part of the M&A process or really any valuation process for purposes of getting a loan at your company or any other way. So here's the agenda. We're gonna just sort of talk about what we believe to be the facets of metadata. The proposition that metadata projects are should be seen as a CapEx expenditure in certain circumstances. Metadata investment creates future value, and how to capitalize metadata projects. And just as a disclaimer, I'm not a tax guy, I'm not an accountant, I'm not your accountant, I'm a lawyer, I'm not your lawyer. So anything that I say here, you need to talk to your finance folks about, and we've done, but this, I hope, gives you a little bit of a talking point around topics that we're going to discuss. That's really the goal here. So IP metadata is a set of fields and values used to describe and categorize your IP content. And a metadata investment or metadata development refers to the creation of metadata itself through one-off projects. Why is that? Because if you have full-time employees working on creating metadata just as their normal course of business, that's an operating expense. You have hired those people, they're part of your day-to-day. Another component that's really not here is we're looking here at metadata, not data itself. In other words, it's not standalone information that might have a value in and of itself. The only value that metadata has is the value that it attributes to the asset itself. And there's other kinds of metadata like data that describes patents and trademarks. I'm talking here about content because we're about smart content. So the five types of metadata that we view is the technical, which you all know, the descriptive, the administrative, rights and ownership, and financial. Some people don't separate financial and rights and ownership. I think it's an important distinction. And by the way, some of these items reside with the asset. Some of them reside in systems elsewhere. but they point to the asset, it doesn't really matter. It's metadata. And I don't need, I don't think, for this sophisticated group to define each of these types of metadata. So let's take an example. Acquisition. In an acquisition deal, Company A acquires Company B and its respective portfolio of broadcasting assets. Company B delivers the associated legal, descriptive, technical, and financial data for the acquired assets in a trove of external hard drives, computers, and filing boxes. Company A can either hire 2 to 3 or more full-time employees to associate the data, or they can hire an outside firm and pay them a fixed fee to organize and digitize and categorize the metadata for the acquired assets. Those two outcomes are really different because one's clearly an operating expense, the former, option one, and option two may be a cap expense, and that's kind of a key to the distinction. So when you look at Company A, if Company A decides to devote $60,000 to organizing, digitizing, categorizing the metadata for the acquired assets, what are the benefits that Company A receives from its investment? Well, the investment in metadata creates more revenue, it increases operational efficiency, and it manages legal and business risk. All components that we all know intuitively. So is that $60,000 an OPEX or a CAPEX expense? So CAPEX treatment provides advantages, matching spending to benefits. In other words, if you buy the portfolio in 2019, you're going to spend 2019 associating the data, digitizing, enriching it. That expense is not going to be recognized until you start to monetize your content in 2020 and beyond. Therefore, if you're going to spend a lot of money on your metadata today, you may not want to take a hit on your P&L all at once. You may want to spread it out over time. That means smoothing out earnings. It permits you to, on an accounting basis, to take that expense and distribute it across 3 to 5 years. And then the recognizing of the increase in the asset value, the metadata projects increase the value of the content assets described, recognizing the investment as a CapEx recognizes this value increase, right? We all kind of get that intuitively. The metadata gives you a better ability to monetize, speed to market, reduces your risk, it increases the value of your asset over a long time. Okay, so what defines a capital expenditure? Capital expenditure is an expense that creates future benefit in the form of a capital asset. Now remember, if you've acquired, photographs are a really good example. If you acquire 5 million photographs, you spend a lot of money enriching the metadata of all 5 million. What's the chances that each one of those photographs are going to get increased value because of your investment? You may think that it's a really high chance. In fact, you may say that it's inevitable that it'll have zero value if you don't enrich the data. So you have to invest in order to create value. However, your accountants might disagree. They might ask questions about, do you really know that this photograph of the Empire State Building is going to bring us money? And how do I know that it's going to be this future benefit? So that's the discussion that you'll have, because the accountant will want to be confident that the value of the asset goes up. And this is under an FASB standard, that the metadata has to have a probable future benefit that involves a capacity singly or in combination with other assets to contribute directly or indirectly to future net cash inflows. It has to have a particular entity can obtain the benefit and control others' access to it, and the transaction or other event giving rise to the entity's right to or control of the benefit has already occurred. So, and as you'll see here, this is not about tax treatment. Taxes are handled in a very different way. Every tax accountant wants to be able to recognize all your expenses as fast as possible. They don't want it to be spread out over the course of many years, because you get tax, you reduce your earnings this year. That's good from a tax point of view. You pay less tax. It doesn't matter. You can have a cap expense from your internal accounting point of view and a different tax treatment and live kind of happily, but your company has to be comfortable with that. So investments in metadata create future value. As I mentioned, it's revenue generation, cost reduction, and risk mitigation. We're at quarter after. I have a bunch of slides on those three components, but I want you all to feel free to jump in on questions so that I don't take up all the time on these slides if you have them. So I just wanted you to know this. I'm not going to wait until the end if you have something. And if you want to stay longer, that's fine too. I think it's lunch next. So we've identified, and I'm sure there are other ways that metadata can lead to incremental revenue. Improves speed to market, new opportunities, enhances marketing, advertising, and branding efforts, and enables development of new derivative products. And what we did in our white paper is we interviewed folks about their experiences around each of these components, and we have quotes from them, people in the Hollywood community and elsewhere. So we have, for example, a quote here, and none of our quotes are attributed right now. The metadata that we capture for rights information is essential to continuing to move our business forward. Without rights information, short of a situation where we own all rights to all assets, the business grinds to a halt. We wouldn't know what we can do and what we can't do. That seems also relatively clear, I think, to anybody in this room, but I can't tell you how much you've heard here today, and I've heard already that rights information can be incredibly difficult to associate with an asset appropriately and accurately. So enhancing marketing, advertising, and branding efforts, knowing what you own by investing in metadata development can open new opportunities for connecting with consumers through brand development. We have an example in our paper about Carhartt. But it's just kind of evident that they had many photographs from their history, their archives, that they wanted to access and bring back to life and have a campaign around their historical World War I pants, for example. And they were able to do that by investing in their archives. Enabling development of new derivative products. This is the sort of cutting and slicing and crunching and aggregating and disaggregating your content. If you don't have appropriate metadata that goes to the specific subparts of your, say, television show, you won't be able to create clips, you won't be able to create mashups or aggregated content. That goes for movies as well, of course. So this is just a simple slide around what typical monetization of a piece of content looks like. You know, you have the first run, you have the first theatrical showing. Historically, this is the way it works. The red line's your cost, you want your green line to be significantly higher than the cost, and from there, everything's gravy, but it basically goes down to zero. And if you look at this curve in sports world, for example, you would get a much deeper decline immediately after broadcast, because sports content is not really monetizable very well after. Here we're looking at sort of an entertainment curve. But the goal with metadata is, of course, to be able to take that initial showing and find new uses for it. So I've represented that with these peaks and valleys. It's just a sense of, you know, when you've got associated metadata, you can have new uses. It's not just distribution rights. It's also the ability to, which we heard in a prior panel, but remake and sequel rights should be associated with your movies. It might be theme park or merchandise rights. There's any number of ways in which rights data, for example, if it's properly associated and harvested to be connected to your content asset, can create future value without having to go back to the contracts every time, which are not metadata, right? A contract is unstructured data that is very dense and really unapproachable. That's really not where we want to have to go every time that there's a business decision around your rights. So, cutting down costs and increasing efficiency. Avoiding unnecessary expenses. Without transparencies across assets owned by the organization as a whole, managers may buy or license other content rather than reuse their own content. And they also, having proper metadata will improve the operating efficiency by reducing the barriers to the information, makes it easier for employees to find information for programming, product development, marketing efforts. Good metadata can save on labor hours, boost morale, and improve employee productivity. We all know what it feels like to be sitting there with a great movie and not very good metadata. It's very demoralizing, and that's what we hear over and again from our clients and the people we spoke to for this paper. And managing risk. We all know that when you don't have the right metadata associated to your film or television show, you run the risk of violating somebody's rights. Or you may not have the right tags associated with, say, children's content, which will potentially put you in breach of an FCC rule or some other regulation. So this kind of gets to the crux of it, how to capitalize the metadata investment. These two paradigms are, the content asset stands one place, the metadata stands another. That's number one. And then there's number two, which is the metadata is the capital improvement to the underlying binary asset. It's really number two that we're talking about here, right? Because metadata doesn't have a value without the binary. And therefore, we really can't see it as any kind of investment in it as a capital improvement. So, here we characterize the metadata describing the content portfolio as a distinct and tangible asset. This is pretty much what I was saying. And then on number two, that's what I was really saying, sorry. So the investments in metadata development are investments in future benefits. Metadata projects continue to pay off for 2, 5, 10 years. Accordingly, metadata development expenditures act as capital expenditures or investments in assets which are expected to generate probable future benefits in later periods. Metadata development costs should be seen as costs improving or adding value to existing content assets recognized on the balance sheet. Yes?
With respect to that third piece there, does the existing assets still need to have depreciable value on the balance sheet, or is it just if it was ever? So I'm thinking about films, the film costs have been advertised over 10 years and what have you, and there's a resurgence. Is that enough?
If the asset's already depreciated on the balance sheet and it's no longer on the balance sheet, then you really can't. I'm sorry?
No, I'm thinking through that because it's an issue at that point.
It does, yeah, exactly. You need to have it on the balance sheet in order to improve it. Otherwise, it's no longer an asset to the company. And you can't create a new, you can't take the same asset and make it into a new asset later on, from what I understand. Again, that might be a very technical rule that you might be able to do if you sort of bring back an asset from the dead. That, you know, there may be some accounting rule, but I don't know of one. So this is sort of towards the end of the talk, and it really basically says that, you know, this is the way what you consider to create a capital expenditure for metadata. So are the content assets on the balance sheet? That's something that you need to check with your accounting departments. I think maybe in Hollywood it often is the case, but I'm not completely sure what companies are doing these days. There's a reasons to have them on the balance sheet and reasons not to. You know, as I said earlier, companies may want to write them off fairly quickly and not have them on the balance sheet because they're just an expense, or other companies may want them. So if the assets are not recognized in the balance sheet, the firm can't recognize the metadata expense as an improvement to the capital asset, as I said. And typically, firms will recognize intangibles on their balance sheet if they acquired them versus internally generated them. But some specific industry rules do allow capitalization of internally generated intangibles. So how probable are the future benefits? We talked about that. It's really something that you need to convince your accounting department that it is really probable. And therefore, the expense should probably be relatively material. If it's a $60,000 expense, your company may not want to go through the process of creating that as a capital improvement, whereas if it's a $6 million expense, that might very well be a very different conversation with the accounting department. Can the firm allocate the cost to the asset? So how simple will it be to determine the full amount of the cost to be capitalized? If the project's externally executed, it'll be simple to allocate the cost. If the project's internally executed, carried out by employees, allocation of the expenses to the metadata will be more difficult. So as long as the metadata project improves an asset that's already on the balance sheet, the future benefits are probable, and the firm can estimate the time frame of the future benefits, the firm can reliably allocate the cost of the investment to capital expense. And in that case, capitalization may well be appropriate. So these are my final thoughts. State of metadata around a content portfolio speaks volumes about how content can be leveraged. In the context of an asset acquisition, the firm should consider the state of the metadata before buying the library. Again, it oftentimes is ignored. And assets which come with complete metadata should command a higher price. Again, that's not the case in almost any transaction that I know about because no one's paying attention to this issue. So it's important to raise that awareness with whomever's making the kind of corporate development decisions, because otherwise you get stuck with a lot of junky assets. So that's my presentation. Are there any questions? All right, yeah.
More of a general question. You kept on talking about the white paper. Is this information separate from the white paper or derived from the white paper?
This is derived from the white paper. Yeah. The white paper was the primary output, and this is the slimmed down version. Anybody else? All right, well then enjoy your lunch. Thanks for coming.